Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a very, very short turnaround. The Miami Dolphins game will be happening in 96 hours from the end of a 70-minute football game and a victory over the Minnesota Vikings. All of our WNST coverage brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be doing this Maryland Crab Cake Tour thing twice this week. I have canceled the trip to Miami. We're going to be on Wednesday at Fadley's. We got some great guests on at Fadley's on Wednesday morning. And then on Friday, we're going to be out in Timonium at the racetrack, finally having Tommy's crab cake up there at Nick's Grandstand Grill. I'm looking forward to chatting with a lot of folks here this week. Had a great week last week at Silver Spring Mining and down at the Chop Tank. And we'll be letting ourselves play. I might even have some scratch-off tickets to give away on Friday at Nick's Grandstand. And Luke is here, and he is scratching the surface of what is – dude, you've been doing this a dozen years now. I've been doing it twice as long as you, and these seasons take on their own lives in the middle, and these four-day turnarounds and the twists and turns and comebacks, and how many times are we going to need Justin Tucker? By the way, plug for Chicken Palooza in 21, and big thanks to my friends Ed Stronsky for sending some extra shirts over that fit. Justin Tucker, big kicks, short games, Lamar Jackson, but Luke, a victory over the Vikings, and they're 6-2. And this is, as I said, this is one of the good seasons. We're into one of those years where I felt for my friend Bob Hagen getting on the bus, heading back to BWI, having to fly out and play the Chargers next week. The Vikings left the parking lot 3-5, and they felt like they should have won the game.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the story of their season. That's why so much talk about Mike Zimmer not being the head coach there anymore, as far as him being on the hot seat. I mean, it's, we talk about it all the time, about it being a week to week league, how competitive, how schizophrenic the league can be. Like, it's just crazy, right? I mean, you have certain weeks where someone looks like one of the best teams in the league, and then, and we've seen it on multiple occasions, teams go out and lose to the Jets. I mean, it's absolutely wild. I mean, I made the point watching Thursday night football, that Indianapolis Jets game, where I thought back to, okay, Indianapolis blows out the Jets, who had just beaten the Bengals, who had blown out the Ravens, who beat Indianapolis.
Wasn't there that one year the Terps won the national championship that way?
Yeah, didn't they beat
Penn State, who beat Ohio State, like it was one of those, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely wild in that way. But, you know, I mean, the Vikings are, you know, kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum of the Ravens. I mean, we've talked about the Ravens, you know, the close losses, the close wins. You're 6-2. You know, there are a couple blowouts in there that you mix in. Of course, the Chargers and the Bengals. And, you know, we can call the Broncos game a blowout if you want, although it was a 16-point game, two scores. But, you know, on the flip side, I mean, the Vikings are 3-5 and going nowhere fast. But you look at that team, their five losses, are all by a single score. They typically don't do the little things very well. As I mentioned, Sunday aside, they haven't been very good on special teams, but they were pretty good on Sunday. But, you know, whether it's a coaching decision, whether it's a critical mistake at the wrong time, you know, whether it's your quarterback playing really, really well at times, which Kirk Cousins does, and then other times not playing so well, which I think we saw on Sunday. You saw the good and the bad with him. But, you know, that's the league, though. You come up short. We talked about this a lot in 2015. You know, when the one losing season of the John Harbaugh era. Think back to how many of those losses were so close. And it's just the nature of the league. That's why you should never get too high when things are going well, unless you happen to be that weird 2019 Ravens, or, you know, the Chiefs several years ago, or go back to the Patriots a little over a decade ago, where, you know, those teams are fleeting in this day and age. I mean, you don't have the dynasties, you know, the Patriots aside, you don't have those dynasties where you just say, all right, well, that team's going to be 13-3, or now 14-3, let's say, and they're going to be going to the Super Bowl. I mean, there's a lot more. A lot more variance. It can be very unpredictable. And, you know, to bring it back to the Ravens, you look at their defense, for example, absolute disaster. And over the first two drives, they give up the tying touchdown at the end of regulation. Beyond those three drives, and of course, you don't take it away, I'm not suggesting that, they went through some stretches where they played some outstanding football on Sunday. And I look at the defense, as much as we've harped on the missed tackles and stretches where they haven't played well. I look at two specific drives that were absolutely huge. I mean, think back to the end of the first half when Lamar Jackson throws the pick. It's returned inside the red zone. You're already trailing there. And you're down a couple scores and you're thinking, oh my goodness. I mean, is this going to be a situation where you're down three scores at halftime? And they limited it to a field goal. Now, you'd rather not give up a field goal there, but it wasn't the defense's fault. Minnesota did nothing there. And then, so you have that, and then you have Lamar Jackson throwing the pick. I mean, the great play by Anthony Barr where he tips it up in the air and picks it off himself. I mean, a terrific play, but the defense there, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, you're driving for the go-ahead field goal at that point in time, or potentially the game-winning field goal, and you just gave it back to him. And all you're thinking is, you remember what happened on the last drive of regulation, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, is Dalvin Cook going to bust one here? Is Justin Jefferson going to get behind the defense and they're going to lose when it looked like they were on their way to at least kicking a field goal on that drive? And instead, the defense forces a three and out. So those two sudden change situations, as much as we will look at the yardage, and we've talked a lot about the missed tackling, although the tackling was much better on Sunday, especially after the first quarter. Situationally, this defense has been really good. It's just the big plays have killed them. I mean, it was wild to look at. I mentioned the sudden change situations and stretches where they played so well. But then you look at just the overall variance that you see with this team, with this defense specifically. But I think 105 of Dalvin Cook's 110 yards for the game, I want to say, came on three runs. 50 of Justin Jefferson's 69 receiving yards came on the touchdown. Adam Thielen had six receiving yards. I mean, think about that. I mean, you're talking about one of the top receiving duos in the NFL, and Marlon Humphrey and Anthony Averett, they shut that down after that, the early touchdown to Jefferson. So, Dalvin Cook, three big runs, and look, those count. Let's be very clear. I'm not forgiving them on that. But it does speak to
Wink coming in and saying, tighten this up. I mean, we can fix this. They're five plays a game that are killing us, and we have to eliminate three of those five so that it's 14 on the scoreboard instead of 31.
Yeah. Well, and let's be fair to the defense, though. Really? The defense gave up 21 points. If you really want to look at this, Lamar Jackson picks the ball, throws a pick and it's returned inside the red zone. I mean, short of forcing a turnover or the opponent's kicker missing the field goal, you're going to give up 3 points. Yeah. And then you give up a kickoff return for a touchdown. So really the defense gave up 21. I'm not saying that's great, but Nestor, it's 2021. I mean, we talk about this all the time and we've talked about it even going back to the last few years at times where the defense will give up some points. I mean, this league is all it's catered towards the offense. It just is. When you see some of the calls that are made, roughing the passer, there was a terrible one Sunday night that Aaron Donald was called for that I just scratched my head. It's an offense first league. So you're not going to have those shutouts and, giving up 10 points a game like the 2000 Ravens did. I mean,
don't tell the Jacksonville Buffalo game that though.
You'll have it. It does, but then you'll see the next week, those teams will give up 40. That's just what you see. There's little predictability when it comes to even the best defenses.
Well, that's what makes it so much fun to gamble on, right?
Yeah. Well, there's that. And to bring it back, talking more specifically about the Ravens defense, they lose to Sean Elliott on Sunday, which like other members of that secondary, has he been inconsistent? Yes. But he is a guy who has been a difference maker back there at various times over the last couple of years. It hasn't shown up necessarily with Ed Reed highlight interceptions, nothing.
Well, it's like
that,
Patrick Queen. You'd rather have him on the field. He can't get better not on the field, and they see the potential in him. He's the best they have. They put him on the field 50 plays a game, right?
Well, I think you look at, Elliott got hurt in the Detroit game. Okay, Denver, they played very well. I mean, the Broncos, another one of those teams that I don't think is any good, but they've had a couple games this year where you say, all right, maybe they're not quite as bad as you think. But we saw Indianapolis, the issues they had in that game, tackling, covering. They didn't have Deshaun Elliott. He came back for the Chargers game, best defensive performance of the year. So now you're looking at, all right, third round rookie, Brandon Stevens. What do you have? Jimmy Smith, who, by the way, as I mentioned, Jimmy Smith, and I'll throw Pernell McPhee into this. Those guys barely played on Sunday. Now, was that by design based on the matchup? Or, and what I suspect, and maybe John Harbaugh will address this, maybe not, on the short week, maybe a couple of those veteran guys, you know, McPhee's had some, you know, he's had some nagging things he's been playing through. I know he's had a bad shoulder, at least earlier in the year. Jimmy Smith, we know the story with him, but it was strange. Pernell McPhee played three snaps. Jimmy Smith played one snap. And that was even after Elliott left the game. It was Brandon
Stevens. And that's dressing them, right? I mean,
so my question is, was that matchup dictated in terms of personnel packages? Or, and this is what I'm suspecting, maybe you wanted to try to get them through Sunday unscathed, knowing you have a Thursday night game, and then, you know, you don't have any more bye weeks. You don't have any, you don't have a mini bye like you get after the Thursday night game. Maybe there was a little bit of a sense of, if we can save these guys a little bit, maybe that helps us come December.
Which, and they don't run around on Friday either. So Sunday was a little bit of a curtain the night before the opening performance. I mean, you expect them to play snaps Thursday night if they're healthy. Now, if they're right, not healthy, there's a whole different thing.
And that's the big thing.
There were a lot of guys with a lot of snaps on this chart Sunday and playing a 70-minute football game, including me with Lamar and 21 runs, that the stats of Sunday's game are a little warped. But that's not in a good direction. And, you know, you wonder about them bringing 15 minutes down to 10. This is probably the exact example for when the game begins, overtime begins, I say to you, they should play to the death. I mean, I feel that way about soccer. I feel that way about all of this. Right. That if you're going to charge, you know, my wife $210 to sit in the upper deck, finish the game. Don't go home with a tie. I was a hockey fan forever, and I get it with hockey that they'll play seven periods as they do in April. But with the NFL, this 15 to 10, I don't endorse it, and I'm not the Players Association guy and all that, and I didn't endorse 17 games. But this is the exact example about why they could not play any more football. They have to come back. They're playing in 5 minutes, Luke. We're going to blink, and they're going to be playing Thursday night again.
Oh, there's no question about it. And for me, the 15 to 10 minutes in overtime, it's just so arbitrary because it doesn't apply that often. I mean, to your point, I agree with you. I kind of scratched my head at the time and hearing the player safety line when you're talking about a team that's going to be playing on a Thursday night, you know, in this instance, it's such an arbitrary kind of, you know, almost a straw man. Hey, look, player safety. We lowered it to 10 minutes. We're playing another game in 96 hours, you know, from Sunday.
You know what, dude? I've pissed on the college thing, but maybe giving them the ball on the 35-yard line and letting them run four plays, you know, both ways and kick a field goal. Like, that might be a better way to do it than going out there and banging up and down the field for 10 minutes or whatever to not get an outcome, right? That maybe there's not an outcome. I don't know. This is an off-season debate, but it does come up when you got to play on Thursday night. You played 70 minutes, and Nestor would have said play to the death, and Luke would have said play 75 minutes, right? I mean, at the bare minimum, they pulled it back for this occasion because, hey, we might have to go play on Thursday night, and that on occasion that we do, this is why it needs to be 10 minutes, Luke. Maybe that would be the answer.
I would say a more productive, constructive answer, if you're actually caring about this, is don't play Thursday night games, or design your schedule so that Thursday night games are coming out of a bye week. How about that? So we know the story. I mean, it's all about the dollar signs, but it is going to be interesting to see how the Ravens respond. You know, defense, and this is why, and we talked about it in the context of winning the football game, but your defense was only on the field for 23 minutes on Sunday. So if you want to talk about something that could pay some dividends come Thursday night, it is that your defense, despite it being a 70-minute game when you count overtime, they only played 54 snaps on defense, which isn't, that would be a pretty typical number for regulation. So that was good to see. On the flip side, the offense, however, they were on the field for, I think, counting plays that were penalties, you know, so they're not official. They had 98 plays looking at their game book. So that's a lot for your offensive line, especially those guys. I mean, you mentioned Lamar taking some hits. And look, I mean, Lamar's had, you know, we've seen him miss some practice time over the course of the season. Now, you know, it hasn't impacted him on Sundays, but it has been something they do. So
how many snaps for Ricard? You just as an example 60, of a guy.
61.
61 snaps for Ricard. So, yeah. I mean, I remember him sitting at a Greenmount station having a crab cake with us, playing 12 snaps on both sides of the ball and being a little bit performer. Part of that's Boyle, and part of that is, to your point, you mentioned McPhee and other guys that this veteran coaching staff would be saving or resting or all of that, and the Deshaun Elliott situation piled into this and any other nicks that come out of the game that we're unaware of. You know, the offensive guys are the ones that are going to need some gas at the end of the game. And I want to say this because I thought about this and actually wrote it down in the last segment and I didn't bring it up. And I've never asked Lamar about this, and I don't ask a lot of questions, but when I'm around, I'm going to ask questions now. I like the reaction I get, especially my hair. Aerobically, Lamar's special. And I remember a couple of years ago when the Capitals were in their run, and you can go back and Google this, about one of the Capitals players having this expanded aerobic zone. I don't even remember what player it was, but he had been tested and they've talked to him about it. Sort of like Bjorn Borg having 40 heartbeats a minute, like in 38 heartbeats a minute resting. Just a special kind of human. I had Rob Santoni on talking about running marathons at 55 in Boston. I mean, athletes are athletes, but I've never seen Lamar gassed. Luke, when the game's over, even on the field, when they go up to Evan Washburn comes up to him, he's never tired. He comes into the training room. He doesn't look tired. Or the interview room. I saw Flacco looked ass kicked, you know, before wins and after wins. Like, he looked like he needed a nap from his 8 kids and like all of that. Lamar doesn't look like he's going to be on a scooter after the game, but it's about having wind at the end of the game. And you and I pointed out the Vikings just were gassed defensively and players that had never really been on the field before in that game. That the end of the game, Lamar's a special guy because of how that goes. And this Thursday night game will be that case in the second half where it's always slogging in these Thursday night games because these guys are tired.
It's extraordinary. I mean, it really is uncanny what he's able to do. And you're right. I mean, I even think back to last year when he was coming off of the COVID infection, the Dallas game, which was his first game back. He said he felt a little tired. He didn't play like it that night. And you know, maybe it said a lot about the Cowboys at that point in time as well, but you know, he runs 21 times. He throws 41 passes. He takes 3 sacks. He was hit 8 times in the pocket. I mean, this is even with scrambling. Hit 8 times in the pocket. So it speaks to what I was saying in our previous segment where this isn't 21 design runs. It's not a deliberate, he's going to run 20 plus times. A lot of it has to do with their pass protection. A lot of it has to do with, you know, if something breaks down, guys aren't getting open, which, you know, there were some times in the first half I thought he missed some open receivers, like guys that he didn't throw to that he could have. So,
well, there's no defensive coordinator in the league that says, let's design something to make Lamar run.
Well, sure. There are some who do that. There absolutely are guys that have done it because the thought has been, let's make him run because we'll hit him. We'll hit him. We'll hit him. We'll wear him down. It hasn't worked out too well for teams to this point.
Sometimes he breaks your ankles and you got to go chase him 64 yards.
I think the biggest thing, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I was looking at this over the weekend as I did my 5 predictions at BaltimorePositive.com, and Lamar Jackson going into Sunday's game. And I will count that because, you know, one again, he is now 25-2 when he makes a start against a team for the first time. You know, two teams got him the first time they saw him. Kansas City, his rookie year, which we all remember what that game was like at Arrowhead, and Tennessee in the playoffs 2 years ago. So what does that tell you? One, Lamar Jackson's really, 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 really good. And two, all these great defensive minds, and Mike Zimmer belongs in that group. I mean, he has been a great defensive coach for a long time. Go back to those Bengals years where he gave Joe Flacco absolute fits. But all these great defensive minds, you know, they'll come up with a plan in the meeting room, right? They'll come up with a plan and they'll send it out. You know, the game plan will be sent out to the guys, your guys on their iPads, and you're feeling good about that. And you think you've got everything you're going to try to do. You have option, who's got which guy, and you know, we're going to try to cover this portion of the field, make them throw to the flats, which, by the way, The Ravens had a lot of success throwing to the flats on Sunday, but we've seen lots of teams do that, right? Make Lamar Jackson throw outside. We're going to take away between the tackle stuff and make him run the ball. Like, all these teams have these great plans. And guess what? Those plans sound awesome during the week when you're in the meeting room. Those plans sound awesome when you're reading it on your tablet, when you're a player or a coach. Those plans sound doable when some scout team wide receiver is playing quarterback, simulating Lamar Jackson on the practice field during the course of the week. But when you haven't seen that guy and you get on the field and the bullets are flying for real on Sundays, it is a different experience. And these guys, some teams do better than others, and give the Vikings credit. Hey, they played a good football game against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense in the first half. But it is so difficult to do that, to sustain that. And that's why, you know, if you're the Vikings right now, you're saying, wow, we scored and we completely carved up their defense on the first couple drives. What happened after that? Because all things being equal, we've talked about this a lot. You got to score points against the Ravens, because you're not going to hold Lamar Jackson down for 60 minutes, or in the case of this game, 70 minutes. But it does speak to, when you're talking about a guy who is 25-2 when he's starting against a team for the first time, it's going up against, take your pick of whatever elite special pitcher you want to think of. Randy Johnson, Clayton Kershaw in his prime, go back to Walter Johnson in the early 20th century. This thought that, all right, maybe as time goes on and you get a little more familiar with the guy and you've had enough at bats against the guy, maybe you'll get him now and then. But that first time you see him, boy, good luck. I mean, you're really going to need it. And that's what Lamar is. And this isn't about, quote, figuring it out. I mean, that whole narrative over the summer was dumb. It was always dumb. Patrick Mahomes hasn't been figured out. Right. You know, I think Patrick Mahomes will be fine in the big picture, but we're seeing him struggle right now. The lesson here is not that guys get figured out. The lesson is success is a moving target, and it's really tough to succeed over the long run in this league. Not even talking about the injury factor that exists for everyone, whether you're Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, or Russell Wilson, who's missed most of the season with, or a big chunk of the season with a finger injury. It's really tough to do. And it's about adjustments and then adjusting to those adjustments. But my point is, when you're the Vikings facing Lamar for the first time, you might come up with a plan that you feel great about, and you might have some success. Hey, Lamar Jackson threw two picks, could have had another pick or two. You know, he had a ball where he kind of fumbled it up in the air and caught it. You know, so he didn't take very good care of the football, if we're being honest. And you know, credit the Vikings for being a big part of the reason why. But it's just so tough to do that over the course of a game, because I forget who said it. It was either Sunday's post game, or it might have been over the course of the week leading into Sunday, that you can do everything perfect against Lamar. You can play your assignment perfectly. Everyone covers the guy they're supposed to be covering. You know, you account for the option. You account for, you know, who's got the back, who has him at the mesh point. And he just does something off script that you just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, it's Lamar Jackson. And that's what the Ravens have. It's wild. It really is. I was talking to, I believe it was my brother-in-law about this. And he's a big Philadelphia sports fan, as you know. He actually made the comparison of Lamar Jackson reminds him of Allen Iverson in his prime, from the standpoint of, one, he never gets tired, going back to the point you made. And two, he'll just do something that, you don't draw it up from an X's and O's standpoint. I mean, how many times have we seen him look like he's bottled up by three guys in the
Allen
pocket?
Iverson would say, you can't practice that.
Right. Sure. No question. Right. Very good. I like that. But it just speaks to, he is that special, unique athlete, and not just an athlete, because, you know, that takes away from the fact that he has great instincts. He understands how to play the game. He sees the field way better than anyone gave him credit for coming out of Louisville. You know, that whole narrative as far as his ability to quarterback. He's throwing the ball better than ever. I mean, wasn't a fantastic you know, clearly wasn't a great first half for him. That's obvious.
Balls are sailing on him. I don't know what that is. But balls are going high more than low with him.
But it was better in the second half. I mean, he made plays in the second half. And to their credit, I mean, and credit Greg Roman as well, they really found success in the flats. I mean, they even ran a couple screens. How about that? I mean, screens. The Ravens running screens. Who would have thought? And it actually worked on a couple occasions. But, you know, they're winning games. And we'll continue to say it. I'll say it again. The only thing that's holding him back right now in terms of his MVP profile is not throwing as many touchdown passes as some other guys in the league. But threw three on Sunday, as I predicted that he would throw multiple touchdowns. And I think you're going to start seeing more of that because he's throwing the ball too well. And oh, yeah, Devin Duvernay, touchdown. Devontae Freeman, touchdown. Patrick Ricard, touchdown. Rashad Bateman, all he does is catches passes to move the chains. You're seeing a passing game that continues to evolve and grow. And for all their other flaws, that's something that excites you as you get closer and closer to January.
Luke's going to be in Owings Mills for 2 minutes and 2 seconds. Thursday night, we're back into football, then a little bit of a long week. I will be in Chicago next week. This week, the Maryland Lottery is sending me out on the road to do the Crab Cake Tour. We were at Silver Spring Mining last week. Great guest. You're going to hear it on the air this week here, as well as our Chop Tank visit, which was sort of extended. I was having so much fun down at Fells Point. I hung around and ate the remoulade and the fried chicken. This week on Wednesday, we'll be at Fadley on Wednesday morning, and that means crab cakes and probably mac and cheese, probably bring home some fresh fish from the seafood market there at Lexington Market. Don Moeller will be with me for that. And then on Friday, Nick's Grandstand Grill from 2 until 5 afternoon. Come on out, bet the races, say hello, have a crab cake, have some oysters, Rockefeller. We'll do that at Nick's Grandstand Grill. All of it presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. Next Wednesday with Mayor Brandon Scott at Coco's, finally getting back out there. That's on the 17th. And I got some pumpkin ice cream from Wise the other day. My favorite Wise ice cream is the pumpkin ice cream. I've decided that. So we're going to have some Wise conversations around here this week. Also want to give thanks to our friends at Planet Fitness because people are moving in a little bit. I know it's going to be a little warmer this week. If you're considering getting back in shape, Lord knows my back, the whole deal. Our friends at Planet Fitness can get you into shape and treat you right, certainly within your budget as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, doing a lot of football here, getting you ready for the Dolphins and the Ravens on Thursday night, and doing some of those Wise conversations here at BaltimorePositive.com.